friends. Hey, Regina.
What's going on, friend?
Well, this episode is a little bit different than what the rest of the folks are used to hearing.
True.
Right? Mm-hmm. So recently, we held a live event at the High Museum of Art of Atlanta.
In Atlanta, if you are really from here with no T's.
Absolutely. And it was discussing Virgil Abloh's Figures of Speech exhibition.
So
and
dope.
This notion of tourist versus purist that he loves to explore in his work.
So usually we're an audio podcast, so you don't think about the visuals, but we were fancy and cute at this particular event. So if you want to see how we were looking and also all of the dope visual aids we used, make sure you go to bottomofthemap.media/live. You ready to go, Miss Chris?
Let's get it.
Let's go.
Because of this man over here.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mr. Abloh.
Yes, exactly. Somebody who I came to first know as like a hip hop tastemaker, but then went on to be a fashion designer and overall just like a cultural innovator, you know, somebody who's been really significant to in as far as like bridging the worlds of hip hop and high fashion together. And you may be wondering, well, how exactly did Virgil Abloh get to this very position? Fortunately, there is a Naomi Campbell who had the very same question.
Mm-hmm. How did you get this job?
I dreamt about it.
I willed it
into fruition, thinking that it can happen and doing everything in my power to sort of make it cross
and
my
make
path.
It manifest.
I can name instances 8 years ago that were part of this process, or I can name instances 8 months ago that were part of it. And I think it's a metaphor for anything that one wants to do in life.
When was the first time you came to Paris, you and your crew?
8 years ago now, maybe. Kanye and myself have been friends for 14 years now. We've always been driven by fashion. We've always been the kids in the store, like, wanting to know more, because felt like something that was at play, something that we didn't know, but we appreciated. Mm. So that was ironically at the Louis Vuitton store on Michigan Avenue. Kanye's like, wait, Paris Fashion Week? This is where the new collections are debuting? I'm gonna go, you know? Like, I'm gonna use this door, and he invited all of us to go with him, because he knew that that's what we were into. And he's like, this is where the designer's at. These are where the ideas are coming from. You know, like, we would literally be at the Maurice Lobby, come down and look at each other's outfits and be like, oh, you gotta step it up. Like, you know, we need to go this way. We're going to Comme. So this particular show, Comme des Garçons, we get out. There's only two photographers. Not, like, there was no scene, basically. Mm-hmm. One of which is Tommy Tan, and he takes the photo of Kanye, Taz Arnold, Fonzworth Bentley, mm-hmm. Ivan Jasper, Don Crawley, and myself. That photo then like began to like rule the internet. You know, this is like before social media was like fully ramped what it is now. That was us sort of saying, hey, we want to participate in this arena.
Now, when Virgil was talking about that photo, he's talking about this photo up here. Just as Virgil was saying at this particular time, there weren't really like the streetwear photographers out there in this particular moment. And you got to keep in mind that like Kanye at this point is just kind of dipping his toes into fashion. He actually just collaborated with Louis Vuitton for the first time. But really, Kanye still felt new in this high fashion space, but he really wanted to announce like his arrival at this particular space. So like when Kanye is running around with Virgil, who is part of his new entourage, they're of the mindset, like, they are basically, like, rampaging.
I mean, can we talk about this man's hot pants, though?
Let's go ahead. What would you like to say about his hot pants?
I don't know if I'm brave enough to do hot pants. But I also think it was really interesting. Like, you have, like, it's almost a spectrum of fashion. You have what's kind of conservative, and then it goes all the way to, yeah, I did that. Or, yeah, that's me. But isn't this when we could like Kanye in public? Okay, because, you know, I don't think he lost everything yet. This is before he did the Runaway Slave Collection in 2018.
Correct.
But that's why I don't know high art. So that might be high fashion, but, you know, the
Okay. Well, I think that was the point. We're not yet at this point where we expect to see like a Nicki Minaj or a Cardi B at Paris Fashion Week. Mm-hmm. You know, this was like in 2008 for the year 2009. And so people aren't used to seeing hip hop figures in the space. It's still very much a novelty to where you would say that like folks like them felt kind of like a tourist in the space.
Well, I mean, yeah, but I mean, like, you had hip hop lines before that, Rockaware, FUBU, you know, Baby Fat. Apple Bottoms.
You're forgetting somebody, or at least one person who we all know.
Oh love. My God, Andre 3000. Yes, Mr. Bixby Fresh on one knee. Yes, so, I mean, like, that was when he was releasing his Benjamin Bixby line, so he was kind of playing around with this idea of fashion, but it's also kind of important to understand that you and Andre, he says that he's super shy, but a lot of his statements, criticisms, commentary is often what he wears and how he wears it. So for him to come out with this line in 2008 kind of made sense, yeah. Which also set up when he became part of that Gillette Masters of Style campaign.
Oh, yeah.
That came out in 2012. Uh-huh. But I also thinking about, you know, Three Stacks too, and thinking about how Virgil Abloh's in conversation with Southern hip hop, he also is useful for one of our most favoritist artists. Right. He rebranded him. He went from Titty Boy to 2 Chainz.
Yes, very, very good, everyone. Everyone here gets A's so far.
So far, so good.
I love
Can't say
class.
That from all the students, but so far, so good.
So to kind of catch people up from that iconic photo, basically Virgil and Kanye and the like, they are forming a creative think tank by the name of Donda. Now, at the time, like, Kanye was really envisioning that this creative think tank would encompass like video game developers and this, that, and the third, but their initial clients were hip hop artists, specifically like as far as like the cover art, basically their friends and their family. So they took it upon themselves to like really lead the artistic direction for a lot of these releases, and that meant like really taking lead with, like, for example, for 2 Chainz. This connection is really important because this is really more of a pop art approach to like this particular album artwork. Like, I feel like 2 Chainz has said at one point that I think what people expected of him at this particular time was like, you know, the portrait, you know, like a pen and pixel type of situation. But by really taking the pop art approach and literally displaying the 2 Chainz on like the cover artwork, it kind of gave people a little bit of pause. They were like, wait a minute, what exactly is going on here? Like, this is a very literal approach, but it's also a very fashionable approach. So what we're about to play next is like basically just like a synopsis, like if Virgil Abloh had a LinkedIn, essentially. This is what this montage sort of represents. So what you're hearing is like his stock as like a creative tastemaker kind of, you know, rise, and it all begins with hip hop.
Ben Trier. Drop that new exclusive shit, Mike. I ain't really fucking with that Ben Trill. Swear them niggas booty like tip drill. Nah, I ain't really into throwing shots. But these motherfuckers better give me my props or the pop.
Ice, needies. Ice, VS1s. Off-white, V-long ones. Foreigns, part of my line.
Cool. All she got niggas and bitches too. All she wear off-white to church. Ooh.
Money moves, off-white shoes. Came straight from Virgil Abloh.
White, and it's snowing.
White,
and it's snowing.
Virgil got a paddock on my wrist going nuts.
Got M's and the Swiss offshore, that's why all my shit costs more. Got my sauce right and it's off-white, can't get it out the store, and I watch out.
I'm looking real extra, with the top keys, I'm on the green Teslas. So Virgil, right brick on my brick. So Virgil, white brick on my brick, ayy yo.
Atlanta shit, I'm a fashion lover. Virgil Abloh did my first album cover. Got my first play with Mike Will. Nigga, I don't sleep no night.
So yeah, that montage is pretty interesting because in the beginning, you might have heard a mention of Ben Trill. Ben Trill was Virgil Abloh's first foray into like this fashion space. Like, it was like his first brand slash like creative collective. But then, as you heard in those references, like he went on to found like Off-White and all this other stuff. And then, of course, with like the Drake lyric, I mean, that basically signals that Virgil has arrived as like a peer in this high fashion space, which I feel is really important. So there's definitely like a kinship that we've come to hear over the years, and that's for good reason, because here's a case study. Everybody knows this man, of course, by the name of 2 Chainz, but of course, prior to that, he was known as Titty Boy from College Park, and he had... I know, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. But
put some respect on that man's name. Titty Boy? His mama called him Titty Boy, we're going to call him Titty Boy.
Exactly. Oh, my God. All right.
I'm sorry. Case study. Continue.
No. So,
I'm so sorry.
So what I was saying, like, when he was with Dolla Boy and, like, teaming up with, like, Lil Wayne and just, like, getting his feet in the ground, like, he presented himself, like, I mean, in his words, too, as any rapper essentially would. So this is, like, the before he met Virgil Abloh.
It's still right, like, 10 plus years later. This is when we can recognize Lil Wayne. Sorry. I just love y'all know the lyrics. Thank you so much. The beat's so hot, the flow is so ice cold.
Messenger bag game.
One thing I thought started out like visually about the Duffel Bag Boys song was like it reminds me of the Players Ball video with Outkast. Like
right
that whole,
cereal,
you know, you waking
right?
up, eating the cereal, you know, you got your one good clean white beat on. They were like, look, you need to make this shit count. But I'm for real, like, especially how young everybody looked. Like I was playing, but I was kind of for real. Like, Lil Wayne still looked like Lil Wayne. See, it wasn't even me. Let the record show, the people said. Mm.
Yeah. Exactly. I think that's a really apt comparison. Would you say the same of Virgil Discount?
No.
All right, let's take a look.
This too rides in your car.
Check me out now. Tony. Yeah. Walked out of Louis looking like a Virgil Discount. If it ain't 100, it's a miscount. 7 days a week, I smoke 6 ounces. If a chick with me, she like big houses. If a chick with me, she like foreign cars. If a chick with me, she like Goyard. If a chick with me, she like protein. Make a sick of rich nigga clothes off. Pull it to the flame with my doze off. Try to count a million and I dozed off. And I got my fingers in the air. Hanging with Paul Bear. Turn you to lawn care. Rex in my mind cloud. It's just a small shell. Hold up, make sure it's all there. I go to sleep in designer, psych. I go to sleep in vagina, yikes. Tell any owner a lot, right? Soon as I left, I got right. This is precision and detail. See, life is a beach, seashell. I sold the bags for retail. I'm from the block, no email. Walked out of Louis looking like a Virgil Discount. If it ain't 100, it's a miscount.
Okay. Hold on, let me go back to my professor mode. Okay.
Go ahead.
Two things that come to mind for me. One, it's interesting if you contrast the Duffel Bag Boy video and this video. One, this one seems like the lines are cleaner. It literally seems like Virgil Abloh put that fashion, like they invoked that fashion sense that he has. Clean lines, blank slate, black and white, right? Like there seems to be this assumption that black and white is more sophisticated, more cultural, which makes me think about the distinctions between high art and low art, right? Like this idea of highbrow and lowbrow art, which is a discussion that has impacted African-American culture since we've had it, right?
Absolutely.
From jazz to hip-hop to now. But I think in particular this stands out because in Southern hip-hop there's this expectation that we don't know how to be refined, sophisticated. Like there are these biases that start to crack through when you have this really amazing video that sets up the possibility like, you know, we could be cultured too.
Yeah.
That's the best way to put it.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. While like researching like Virgil Abloh's like career, it really got me thinking that he's probably the most significant bridge between hip hop and high fashion since Dapper Dan. And I think that's really important to consider because when Dapper Dan first started taking all these fabrics from like a Gucci, a Louis Vuitton, and started refitting them into like these more sportswear fits, like, you know, basically, these brands were suing him, and to the point where he had to shut down his shop because and shut down his operation because they couldn't understand. They were like, what are you doing with our shit? Mm-hmm. You know, he was, they were treating him as more as a lowbrow artist as opposed to somebody who should be celebrated as he is today. Because, I mean, we see the influence of a Dapper Dam absolutely everywhere. I mean, just look at Billie Eilish's Grammys outfit, right?
First of all, Two thanks.
Go ahead, Professor.
All right. Billie Eilish, number one, she need to go sit down somewhere. Don't be trying to talk about the same culture that you pulling from. We saw you with them long ass green nails on at the Grammys. That ain't no white people shit. It's not. So you can't both knock and uplift. You can't pick and choose from us. You know what I'm saying? And she, in her Vogue interview, I was like, all that was missing was that opening introduction to Thuggish Ruggish Bone. We're not against rap. We're not against rappers. But there are these thugs. We are against these thugs. And that's all that was missing, because she was like, all they do is talk about AK-47. And in my mind, I'm like, who the hell talking about AK-47? It's 1991 shit. That's some Ice Cube shit. This is some, that's the first thing.
Go ahead.
Second thing is, I'm not even thinking about Billie Eilish when I think about Dapper Dan. I'm thinking about Lizzo and her outfit on Saturday Night Live.
That is right.
I need it. Go open this crowd, this Fund Me crowd page. I'm gonna give y'all my little cash out. I need to be fly.
That needs to be awesome. On your application for tenure. So
It should.
This isn't your
KSU people, I'm coming for you.
Yes.
Tenure and the Lizzo outfit from SNL. Those are my terms.
More Bottom of the Map after this break.
All right, so welcome back to this live recording of Bottom of the Map. In the second half of the night, we talked about the infamous photo and what that means to Virgil Abloh, Gucci's transformation, and Travis Scott being criticized early in his career, and so much more. Check this out.
So what do we mean by tourists versus purists? So the way that he explains tourists is like the newcomer into the art scene. This is when you're first starting to dabble into your creative field and you're so excited by all these possibilities. But then the purist is, in his mind, like the art historian. Basically, everybody who knows like all the references, all the history, and all the reference points.
They read all the cards and shit.
And like he's particularly interested in exploring the tension between those two, because he wants to kind of like hit that middle ground.
Yeah.
Because on one hand, he wants to, you know, be very knowledgeable when it comes to like his own field, but at the same time he wants to excite that newcomer, because when you excite the newcomer, the tourist and you know, in yourself, like that's where new ideas start to come in, right? So
you thought that since it was Fashion Week, we loved that, we deserved to be there. And what the photo captured is sort of like proper tourism. You know, looks like a tourist to a purist event. We knew we were tourists, but we knew that purists needed to sort of see us, and those were the buyers. You know, technically in those days, there was no photographers out front. There was no influencer. There was no one. It was sort of like, why are you here? You're not supposed to be in here, but I guess you can come in with their security. And there was no hoopla. We just had a passion to participate because we wanted to change fashion. We knew that high fashion didn't recognize us, but we didn't sort of rest in that. And what makes that photo resurfacing interesting is, you know, I couldn't even get into a Louis Vuitton show at that point.
When we're talking about this tourist versus purist dichotomy, Gucci Mane is a perfect example of that. The man literally, well, actually technically, his family nicknamed him Gucci because like there's a whole family of like actual Gucci's in Gucci Mane's family. And that goes back to, I believe, like his great grandfather, you know.
It should be the next album, The Line Full of Gucci is a True Story.
I mean, a true story. Family tree, Gucci. But like, you know, this is somebody who used to receive cease and desist because his name was a Gucci Mane. Like, the brand was like, listen, we're not having this. We're not having this particular Gucci.
This is on BET Uncut.
Let's see who sings along.
We'll see who knows. Somebody know the word.
Oh, I saw one person. Nikki looks so young there too.
Yeah.
So this is the Gucci Mane that I met like when I first moved to Atlanta in like 2009, like 2010.
Burr. Sorry. You were trying to be serious. You were correct.
But it's interesting to see how that Gucci has transformed and how high fashion in particular has taken to that Gucci. Because was it last year, I believe, the same year that Gucci started working with Dapper Dan to reopen up his fashion shop in New York, they tapped a certain Gucci Mane to become a brand ambassador.
Well, look at that. He ain't even hanging up. He just put it on the table.
To me, I think this partnership in particular is pretty significant because I think it suggests how, in terms of like high fashion, the tourist imperialist dichotomy, I mean, I feel like there's some reconciliation there, maybe. I don't even know if that's the right word necessarily, but I do think that it's fascinating, coincidentally, that around the same time that like Gucci decides to approach a Gucci Mane, you know, Gucci Mane is having better SEO than the actual high fashion brand. You know, high fashion is really at a place where they're trying to figure out how to keep their, how to stay relevant in this particular landscape, and they're constantly searching for inspiration. And so, like at this particular juncture, just as when Virgil Abloh is working with the likes of like a Louis Vuitton, we're seeing fashion brands like kind of look around and be like, oh shit, well how do we get cred?
But I also think it's interesting too, is like, and you know, we've had this conversation multiple times, but it's like, oh, we're gonna pull from the trap. You're not gonna see that shit in the trap, right? But I mean, like, it's become something that's fetishized almost. It's like, okay, right. Like we're taking it away from, like, you know, like if we look at the first bricks, right? There was a closer connection, I think, to like, you know, what original trap culture and trap music was trying to do. But since it's crossed over this last decade or so, it's really fascinating to me how the trap has become mobile. But also how the trap has become in and out. Like, if you think trap, it's one way in, one way out. Like, if you listen to anybody, like, from Jeezy to old Gucci to old T.I., it was like, I'm doing this because I have to, not because I want to.
Right.
Right? And not moving away from, you know, the criminal element of it. Like, you know what I'm saying? I understand that part of it. But then, you know, you kind of get, like, this, the next wave come in who's like, yeah, maybe. And then it's also like, but we still can party too. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So like, it ends up having like folks like to pick and choose. Like, you can't just take what the trap sounds like and forget why it sounds like that and where it comes from until now you're getting this introduction into a more mainstream society.
Right.
Worldwide even, you know what I'm saying? That's like, oh yeah, we could just put trap in front of this and make it aesthetically radical, aesthetically, you know, hood rich to an extent, but not thinking about those same people who made that experience for them because they're not part of that culture. They're not part of that experience, but they're making money off of it. You know what I mean? So it was like, but I'm just, it's interesting to me. I mean, like, you know, so even if you think of folks like from Tip to Jeezy, you know what I'm saying? One of the things I was thinking about with this is, and this is something I just think about in general as a Southern hip hop scholar is, you know, do you age out the trap? Because so many trap artists talk about not making it past 19, 25. You know, these folks clearly past those ages, but they're still using trap narratives. And I'm kind of like, does that you know, make it less authentic to be considered to be trap music because you're able to navigate these multiple spaces because that's how you were first introduced? Mm-hmm. Or is it, oh, okay, I'm gonna just pick this up and roll with it because I'm still making money off of it. That's the main thing I think about when we think about highbrow art and lowbrow art, mm-hmm. is you can't pick and choose which part of that brow culture that you want.
Yeah, absolutely.
Without asking serious questions about the cultural production of it, the way that it's presented, who the people are that it originated from, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm like, it's another lens of visibility, I think. But the challenge with that lens of visibility is it's distorted by commercialism.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I think Virgil Abloh really has us reckon with these particular challenges that you're talking about, mm-hmm. because, you know, throughout his work, he's bringing the Southern hip hop aesthetics and introducing him into the high fashion space to where, like, you can't ignore the roots of that. You can't just make trap fashionable without hearkening to, like, a Ben Trill, because we all understand that it has roots with, like, UGK,
true.
You know, things like that. And then, like, literally with this Off-White line, like, putting the word Pyrex, like, onto clothes, just making the root of that aesthetic, like, abundantly clear. I think he's making those connections very explicit, even if it's just like a matter of putting the word Pyrex onto a plaid shirt. So yeah, so to further like extend into this conversation about tourists versus purists, like we got to really thinking about like, well, how can this possibly inform our further conversations about like Southern hip hop? And I think there's like a couple different ways. Shall we start from the very beginning?
Well, what had happened was the top right-hand corner, you know, if you know anything about Southern hip hop or if you're from Atlanta, you know this is when Andre gave us the rallying cry, the South got something to say. But I think that the 1995 Source Awards, it's kind of crazy that the 25th anniversary is this year, and how far we've come in Southern hip hop since then. But what stands out is that, you know, you go to Madison Square Gardens, which is where the Source Awards were. You have Outkast, Goody Mob, Shanti Dash. You have this nice little delegation from Atlanta and this majority New York audience. Of course, you had a couple of folks from the West Coast sprinkled there, but like so many things happened in that Source Award, Chris. It was like, it was Outkast got one for best new album. It was like, you know, you have Suge Knight doing the, if you don't want him dancing in all the videos. Like, talking shit to Diddy, and Diddy was like, offstage, like, take that, you know what I'm saying? And then you have Andre who comes out there, and they win over Smith and Wesson, who they thought would win because they were from New York, and folks were still believing that New York is the whole purest hip-hop shit, whatever. You get up in there, clearly Andre's upset, clearly he recognizes that he is a tourist in this space, you know, he recognizes that these are not his people in them, and he's like, it's like this though, right? Like, I mean, like, it was just really how he like broke it down, you know what I'm saying? But when he was like, the South got something to say, that kicked the door open for us trying to create our own shit, that we are not a tourist, we're the center of it. And Outkast, if you don't love them from anything else, they made the South central to who they were speaking to, who they were talking about, you know, those Southern sensibilities that we often talk about, I guess, was really the focal point. So if you can't thank the cast for nothing else, thank them for the fact that they made the South relevant and made the South relevant to us, other Southerners, who didn't give two damns nor a fuck about what New Yorkers thought, what the West Coast thought. You knew this was an explicit podcast. Y'all over here clutching pearls and shit.
We earned the letter E, goddammit.
But I mean, yeah. So I mean, like for me, I think if we're gonna start this conversation, that's definitely one of those places. That's probably like for a starting moment is when Dre declared the South got something to say.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It also had us reconsidering the moment that Donald Glover won the whole Atlanta team,
right,
won that Golden Globe. I mean, that was such an interesting moment because I think leading up to the show's premiere, Donald Glover really had to kind of like translate what the show was. Like, I think the tagline he used at the time was like Twin Peaks, but with rappers. And looking back on that, I feel like he was using that as a way to like translate to like, you know,
like black folks, you know, be like, yep, Twin Peaks season 1, episode 10.
But I thought that was a really interesting way of framing it and articulating for like the very same audience that he would come to face on that award show night. But compared to like the actual win, I just love how like whole kind of facade went down, and he was just like, and I really just want to thank the Migos.
And that's when everybody, look, do you remember, did anybody watch that shit? That was like, Migos. How you spell that? M-E. M-E. It's almost like you can see them like, he goes, bougie. How you spell bougie?
You know, like when 3-6 Mafia won, I know we're venturing outside of Atlanta, but like when 3-6 Mafia won the Best Original Song Oscar for It's Hard Out Here for a Pimp, like if they had Google back then on their phones, you know they would have been doing the same
outfit. Pimping.
P-I.
It's hard out here for a pimp. P-I. Pimping.
But I mean, yeah, that was such a critical moment, not to mention the very same group who we came to know and love, Migos. Like, I mean, this is, okay, so this was a couple years after Migos had came out with Versace.
Mm-hmm.
And in the video, there was no really real telling whether that was actually Donatella Versace in the video or not. But it doesn't really...
Hold on, was Donatella Versace like Tupac and Salt and Pepper's video? We wouldn't quite, we didn't know, but we were just going
to
assume.
It was so hard to tell. Nobody could really clarify whether that was actually her or not. But if it wasn't her, it was a very, very convincing lookalike. But in any case, like, I feel like Migos at the Met Gala was like the group coming such a long way from the moment that they came out with Versace, because I mean they were very quick to tell you that the hip hop connections between like hip hop and Versace like were abundantly clear. They used to name check Notorious B.I.G. as like, this is why we wear these sunglasses. But like to see hip hop artists like Migos at the Met Gala, like that's still a little bit surreal for me, but I think it came to show how high fashion is sort of welcoming these tourists in these spaces in order to, you know, have continued relevance.
I think academics too, because I think that was right before they did a lecture at the Clyde Davis Institute at NYU.
Oh yeah.
About what culture is, and I was kind of shocked, to be honest with you.
Was this in the culture album era?
Yeah, I think so. But it was, you know, I know there was a big buzz, especially among the younger academics who actually knew who the fuck Migos was. No, for real, because I've been like, Migos, what is that? Not who is that, but what is that, right? But they were. They were introduced into this academic space, you know what I'm saying? They were a tourist in this space, you know what I mean? Academia is the 10th circle of hell. And, you know, it takes a while to learn how to navigate it. But it was interesting because they weren't tethered to what academics were supposed to talk about, what academics were supposed to present. And that not only made a draw for the event, but also ushered in the possibility of younger thinkers being like, oh, okay, well, if Migos can do something like this, I can do something like this. So I just thought that was really, really important.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And to bring Travis Scott into that conversation, I think Travis Scott is a really interesting case study when it comes to this tourist versus purist dichotomy, because when he was initially coming out the gate, I know critics were definitely like a little bit confused. They thought he channeled his key influences like Kid Cudi and a Kanye West and a Drake like a little.
He had a little bit of a British accent on Upper Echelon.
It was so like, confusing. Sir? It was so confusing. There was one piece in particular that Deadspin ran, accusing Travis Scott of being a bigger cultural appropriator than Iggy Azalea.
Lies! Lies and deceit!
Exactly. But it was for like those very same grievances. It's like, this is where critics were coming from at the time. They're hearing this young kid coming out from Houston, and they're like, why does this kid sound like he's from everywhere else but Houston? They were trying to wrap his mind around it. And I mean, like, for those who are familiar with music journalism, there's always whispers, hush, hush, of there being like industry plants or like, you know, artists that just like all of a sudden, like those who like just seem to come up from nowhere, like those are industry plants because it's like the industry wanted them there. But in any case, like, and I remember this being like a critical point of view that I think a lot of people shared, myself included, because like, not the Iggy Azalea part, Jesus.
I'm about to say, we can't be friends no more.
No, not that part. But it was like, it was really confusing to reckon with somebody at this particular time who didn't sound like he was from Houston. Mm. But, and then he comes up with Astroworld many years later, and this is his most critically regarded album. This is his best received album, in part because I think he's doing the Big Tuck references. He's named the album after like this shutdown amusement park from like his hometown. There are all these hometown references. But I mean, in retrospect, especially after rereading that particular Deadspin column, like it really got me to thinking like, what is my place? Like, what place do I have? What say do I have in determining that tourist versus purist dichotomy for somebody else? Mm. Because, you know, this is, I mean, number one, I mean, Travis Scott, I mean, he's still a young artist, right? and he needs all the room and space to be able to grow and to like find his voice. Mm-hmm. He is allowed that right. But then also, you know, come to find out this entire time he's working with the likes of Mike Dean. For those who don't know, he's like a producer engineer whose first clients were like the Ghetto Boys, you know. So this is like a mentor who's as Houston as you can possibly get.
True.
So even as Travis Scott is delivering his quote unquote most authentic album, like it really got me to thinking is like, what right do I have in saying like who belongs in this space? What right do I have as a critic to determine that tourist versus purist dichotomy? And you know, it was a good soul searching exercise. It really got me to thinking that's not up for me to decide. That's not up for me to determine whether this is an authentic statement or not, or this is a justified statement or not. You know, that's really up to the artist. What final thoughts do you have, Regina?
On the one hand, part of me feels like Southern hip hop will always be the tourist in hip hop culture. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing. There are just certain things that we do, that certain sensibilities that we have that don't translate outside of us, mm-hmm. right? But ultimately, I think it is important to recognize that Southerners and Southernists is capable of sophisticated, high art, and I think Abloh's investment in Southern hip-hop artists really demonstrates that, especially him being from Chicago, which for a lot of people is up south, right? So there's that connection in terms of, you know, how Southernness manifests, how it divides, how it, you know, recollects itself. One of the things that we constantly say on Bottom of the Map is that the South's not a monolith, so neither should be the music, neither is the culture. And I think that this is a really good reflection of that. And ultimately, kind of just like as a bow type thing, is I don't think it's going to be the last that we hear about it. And I also hope that this makes room, because now we're entering this digital era age, right? Like 2007, that's when Soulja Boy gets signed with Mr. Collie Park with the, you know, Soulja Boy Dance or whatever. It's the introduction of MySpace, it's the introduction of social media. We're at the height of social media. We're in an era where you don't have to necessarily connect to Southern region, the region of the South, regional identity in ways that previous artists did, because those previous generations have already done the work. So I'm really looking forward to seeing the new and really great, dope ways that younger Southern artists are introducing this idea of the South without being tethered to the historical and cultural implications that their previous, you know, their predecessors had to deal with.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm really keenly interested in what the new South is going to sound mm-hmm. like, essentially, as much as I am in seeing how the digital South is going to continue to grow and to manifest. And, you know, just in a broader perspective, like, I'm really interested in how this tourist versus purist dichotomy changes as hip-hop and high fashion continues to be bedfellows with one another, just because I feel like high fashion's in a place where they feel like they really have to reconsider, like, mm-hmm. what their standards are.
Yeah.
Love it. Okay.
Insert the final theme music here. Please holler at us. Let us know what you think. Leave comments, questions, Snyder marks. We do all that good stuff, right? And we're at BOTM Pod on all the social medias.
I mean, so much thanks to the High Museum of Art.
Thank you so much.
Thank you of us for this conversation. Of course, you do have time to check out the Virgil Abloh Figures of Speech exhibition if you have not done so. And of course, we would be remiss if we did not thank the people who made us a podcast in the first place.
Shout out to WABE and PRX. Thank you guys. Yay! Good night.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode recorded live at the High Museum of Art in Atlanta.
For more information about Virgil Abloh's Figures of Speech, visit high.org.
Ms. Chris, what are we talking about next week?
So next week, Gina, we are back in the studio talking with a special guest,
mm-hmm.
somebody who was featured in one of the most infamous videos in hip-hop history.
And what that has to do with consent. We'll holler at y'all next week.
Thank you for listening to Bottom of the Map, brought to you by WABE and PRX. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave a review. It will help more people find this show. Follow Bottom of the Map on your social media platforms at BOTMPod. Again, that's BOTMPod. Bottom of the Map is hosted by Christina Lee and Dr. Regina N. Bradley. Produced by Floyd Hall. That's me. edited and mixed by Stephen Major Key. Our executive producers are Ja'Anne Berry and John Haas. Our theme music is produced by Smith and Cash. Special thanks to Mike Johns and Lois O.G. Reitzes. This program was made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people. Follow, subscribe, connect, holla.
It's as they say in International Players Anthem, Mike, I choose you.